Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
Yep, we're here again. They haven't kicked us out yet.
Another week.
I was surprised that we were able to park here today. I always just throw topics. We discuss what we're going to talk about before we get in here.
We hit the record button.
Right, and then I go rogue.
Yeah.
But I guess that's just how things work.
That's my life. Fox going rogue.
Going rogue. Next door there's the town planapalooza for the town planning.
Is that what it's called, project. Or did you just make that up?
No, that's the official. It has a little TM next to it. I honestly thought when the guy was here and we were doing the whole town planning meeting when they kicked it off, I thought he was joking about it. And I thought it was a joke that like people of a certain age would get, but like the people who were 46 and older might not. And I think people got it, but it'll be interesting to see how things shake out. I intend to go by and take part in some of that.
You
as
plan
I
to?
Have time. Yeah, I plan a palooza to plan the plan a palooza. because I mean, this is my place. Like, I want to make sure that it continues to be a good place and a good place that when I'm old, I can hang out at,
right,
and my kids can come back to and all that stuff. So, yeah. But that's next door. So I was surprised that we had parking. I figured we would be boxed out and like hoofing it across Meeting House in the torrential rain, which I also hate.
Maybe one day Fox on Sports will get two parking spots.
Yes. Well, I mean, at the Little League complex, we reserve parking spaces.
By numbers?
No. Because all the spots there are numbered,
right,
because they're high school spots.
Do you get 21?
Uh-huh, of course. So one day I showed up there, it was like 4 PM, and 21 was taken, and I was mad. And Maggie was mad because, like, that was the spot I wanted. So we went to Walgreens and bought some chalk, and I wrote reserved over 21.
There you go.
Yeah, so then it became my spot.
Does it happen to be in a safe place from foul balls, or you just...
It's a good spot at the end facing like that town garage that's over there. So, yeah, unless somebody really rolls over on one, you're okay. Yeah.
Perfect.
You're okay. So, a lot of stuff going on around here. I wish it wasn't raining. At least, you know, on the bright side, though, we did have Halloween on Halloween this year.
That was... What
as
do you
opposed
mean?
To, like, power outage. I think this was Libby's 10th Halloween. Is that right? Maybe. And three of them have been weather delayed.
Okay, right. Yeah, no,
right,
this was really nice,
like,
weather. It's perfect.
Power, it was good. I actually didn't walk out of the neighbor's house the entire time. It was a good day to go out and get some candy, and the kids came back. And when we were kids, I mean, you are roughly the same age I am. How many pieces of candy did you get in each house?
Probably one-ish.
Okay, like one, maybe two.
One, maybe two.
And sometimes it was a big deal, like if you went somewhere and there was a bowl.
Yeah.
And you'd like raid the bowl. I hate to admit that because I feel like a bad human.
No, that's part of the game.
Yeah, so you raid the bowl. But even you think about it, you do like a good, solid work. You're getting 30, 40 houses, 60, 80 pieces of candy. Like, I think what happens now is we all have become victim to, I need to buy this 200-piece thing of candy because it's $8 and I'm going to buy two of them. And then I look at 7 o'clock and I still have a massive hoard of candy. And then I start handing kids, like, pounds of candy. Here you go. And here's... gift card to the local dentist office as well, and
right,
some floss.
You're going to need that.
You're going to need that later. But
we probably only went to 15 houses or so, but our kids got about 30 pieces of candy each, so you do the math.
Okay, so that's two. That's fair.
There was one house we went to.
Oh, they're little people, though, so, I mean, you still have that.
Right. There was one place we went to where the hosts were out on the driveway, all in great costumes, and they had bags. You got one thing,
yeah,
but it was a bag of candy that had like five pieces inside it.
Okay, so that was
kind of like a
pre-made and
jackpot.
Easy. Right.
Yeah.
The thing that I noticed this year that was cool.
Not a bag that you would buy at the store.
Right. No.
A special,
like,
Halloween
somebody, yeah,
themed bag.
Yes.
Yeah.
The thing that I thought was cool this year on the adult side was it seemed like there were more adults dressed up, like people going to work dressed up and people trick-or-treating with their kids dressed up, which was awesome. I didn't, and I feel bad. A few years ago, I won, I think, 50 or 100 bucks in the WeDoo, where I used to work, Halloween costume contest by going as Dorothy.
Okay.
There were a lot of adults dressed up. The biggest feedback that I have for kids when I went to the elementary school, because it was the Halloween parade and, you know, Libby was dressed up. The feedback that I have to parents is, I know it's easier. Don't store buy a costume for your kid. Come up with something, figure something out, like go to the basement, grab stuff. You need like random wigs or Superman outfits or whatever. I have it. Ask a friend, ask a neighbor, whatever. But like, there were too many kids who were like Control C, Control V. Like,
right.
It's the same kid,
yep.
You know, copy, paste, copy. Like, yeah. So, but there were some clever costumes.
Right.
Yeah. And there always are.
Yeah, it's fun.
All the teachers went as Red Sox.
Well, speaking of Red Sox, do you know?
There we go. There's the segue.
Do you know what the unfortunate thing about this Halloween was?
There was no Game 7.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Are you?
I was asleep at a decent hour. Well.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to have, you know, Halloween just to Halloween. But
yeah.
But the drama just sort of fizzled out there after the 18-inning marathon.
Right. Well, I'm happy to see, because the Dodgers, from the time that I was a kid, have played, if the game's going 14 innings, they'll play take me out to the ball game in the 14th inning. The real negative, if you're running a stadium at that point, is last call is at the end of the seventh inning. You can't turn the taps back on.
Right.
Like, the taps are off. So, you know, fortunately, you can send a lot of your concession staff home, but all right, what are we going to do at this point? But okay, that game, 7 hours and 20 minutes.
Longest postseason game ever.
Longest postseason game ever.
By time and by innings.
It was longer, I put this in the text string, longer than the 1939 entire World Series.
Combined. Right.
The entire thing.
Unbelievable.
7 hours and 5 minutes. So, yeah, it was weird, and the broadcasters alluded to it. It was, first of all, the death of the sacrifice bunt. Like, give me a leadoff man getting on base. Let me push him 90 feet somehow or hit and run him, and I get 180 feet out of him, and then I win the game on a sac fly. But instead, all of these guys are swinging out of their shoes and hitting 200-foot high and 200-foot far pop-ups.
Not going to do it.
That was, yeah, if I had a nickel for every time I saw Yasiel Puig do that, I'd have a couple bucks. It was like, you know, he must have been getting neck strain from that. But
if you had a nickel for every pitch that Joe Cariello threw that day in relief, you'd be having something.
Oh, no, Nate Eovaldi.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. That's really funny. He was great until that last pitch you gave up to Muncy, and that was that. But, I mean, you knew that they were on borrowed time. You knew that at some point somebody was going to get clobbered. I was surprised. So the Dodgers won Game 3 in dramatic fashion, which kind of you knew that it was going to happen that way. They were the home team. You would have bet that the home team was going to win that game. Game 4, Puig hits that 3-run bomb. The Dodgers go up 4-0. Dick Mountain's on the mountain.
Right.
And that's Rich Hill.
Yeah.
And I still haven't figured this out. He is facing a lefty. And you go, great, I'm going to go to the bullpen and bring in a lesser lefty who wasn't even good enough to make my NLCS roster to face the next guy, who then proceeds to walk the next guy on 4 pitches. And then you have this cascade of garbage. And we've talked about this, like, the mental aspect that goes along with when your bullpen doesn't function according to plan. It happened to the Astros all last postseason, where they would be like, all right, we're going to go to Ken Giles in the 8th inning. And I am willing to bet we talked about this a year ago. We're going to go to Ken Giles in the 8th inning, and Ken Giles falters, and then what? Now you have to deal with this mental baggage of our closer just coughed up the lead, and he's our best guy, and who do I go to now? And that's, to me, the biggest problem of playing the percentages. And I also talked about, we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago, the mental boost that you get out of your starter working out of trouble. And there's no stat on it. But just the boost that you get out of this guy dealing with it, particularly when it's an emotional guy like Rich Hill, he deals with it. He gets off the mound. He goes into the dugout and you get like that Chris Sale in the dugout yelling at everybody. You get that where Hill's like, come on, let's go. We need more runs. Instead, it's Alexander. Then it's Ryan Madsen. I don't even know how that happens. Like, oh yeah, hey, here's our best option. A guy who throws a bunch of changeups that don't move. And he wound up giving up like two of the signature home runs of the year.
Yeah, well, that whole thing turned into quite a story, didn't it? The lack of communication between Roberts and Hill.
That was bizarre.
As he went out to the mound, there was apparently just not really a meeting of the minds of, was Hill done? Was Roberts coming out to get the ball? Or was he just coming out to chat? And before you knew it, Hill had his back to him, saw that he was there, just handed him the ball, went to the dugout, and that was that.
Which is very un-Rich Hill. It's, but I mean, as good as he looked on the prior pitch, 91 mile an hour fastball, like what I can't figure out, like keep an eye on me. Okay, if we make an agreement, because you'll see this happen sometimes, first guy gets on base. Okay, once somebody gets on base, you're done.
Right.
Like, I'm going to let you...
Especially if you walk the first guy.
I'm going to let you control your destiny until this happens. Yep. Or you're working on a no-hitter, you're good until you give up a hit. Once you give a hit up, I'm giving you the hook. Exactly. Because the no-hitter tends to cascade into no-hitter gone, shutout gone, game gone quickly. But in that case, you figure that they would have had the conversation with Hill about how much do you have left in the tank. He threw that last pitch at 91. It was his 91st pitch of the night. They go and get him, and then one thing leads to another, and you have Ryan Madsen surrendering more inherited runners, because why not? And then the Dodgers give up their lead, and you kind of feel like, okay, this is just a foregone conclusion that this is going to go from bad to worse really quickly.
Right.
And I don't know. It's so who hit that home run for the Red Sox, the three-run bomb that was a no-doubter?
Was it? Are we talking about Pierce?
Yes, it was Pierce in that game. So Madsen has the dubious distinction of giving that one up, but what was the other big one he gave up? ESPN, Sunday night. We talked about it on this show.
In the playoffs?
Nope. Regular season.
This year?
August 12th, yep. I was sitting in Kansas City in my in-laws.
Oh, was it Perez?
David Bodie. Nationals on top 3-0, and they had been playing well over the course of the last week or two, well enough that everybody was kind of justifying them keeping Bryce Harper at that point and not getting anything for the Bryce Harper rental down the stretch run. And they were playing well and kind of clawing their way back into the East. And Madsen gets in to face David Bodie, teams up 3-0, bases are loaded. Bodie hits one 448 feet to center.
The Cubs player.
The walk-off. Right. First time in the history of baseball, trailing 3-0, down to the last strike, grand slam, walk-off.
Right.
Like, that was one of those signature moments of the season. That, and then Pierce's home run, even though I couldn't remember because it seemed like every Red Sox player hit a three-run homer. They were like, it was Halloween candy.
Well, then they had the home run fest in game five.
Right. Exactly. It was like, yeah, bad. So, yeah, but Game 5 was a foregone conclusion once the Dodgers lost Game 4. The Red Sox won Game 4. And
yeah, because they didn't really think they could come back to Fenway and win 2, and they probably didn't want to bother.
Right. Well, and compounded by the garbage work of the Dodgers bullpen in Game 4, where, okay, it's one thing if it's 5-4. Kike Hernandez hits a two-run bomb off Kimbrel. Okay, now you got a 6-5 win, and you got momentum again. But when you give up that bases-clearing double... See ya.
You're still back.
It.
Yeah.
So it was timely hitting by the Red Sox. I do think, as much as it pains me to admit it, I think position players, they had a better team.
Who did?
The Red Sox.
Yep.
I think that Cora is, I do like Dave Roberts. I think Cora is a better manager than Dave Roberts is. Cora controlled the series. I mean, if you were a basketball coach, you'd say he controlled the tempo. He really did. Dave Roberts kind of rested and, all right, I'm going to let him dictate who I'm going to be playing based on who his starting pitcher is, and that doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, yeah, Kiki hit that home run, but to hit 100, basically to hover around 100
yeah.
and get thrown out there in the three hole, I mean, that was Cora one-upping Roberts.
Yeah, it was, okay, I'm just going to do this, and if you want to give me, if you want to stack your lineup that way because you're so worried about lefty-righty matchups, go for it. But that was the Dodgers' Achilles heel. We talked about it last week where Devers is hitting 244 against against righties and 229 against lefties. Really, you're telling me the marginal difference of throwing a lefty in is basically that once every 3 weeks, he's going to get an extra hit?
Right.
Big deal. Like, really? Like, that's playing in percentages? That's just dumb.
Yeah, it's almost like Roberts kept going with that heavy right-handed lineup just to say when he did it before, it wasn't a mistake. Like, I want to show that it's actually going to work at some point.
Yeah, I don't know. And I just know. There are other things, too, where, like, I am happy the Manny Machado era in Dodger blue is over. To me, that was never a fit. He'll be a good Yankee.
Most likely.
And the Red Sox fans will continue to hate him. I also, what I can't figure out is when you're running up the line, allegedly at full speed, so fast that you can't avoid a guy's ankle, how can you blow a bubble?
You have to be quite talented.
Right. So I just wonder. Like, I don't know. It's not even a matter of playing the game the right way. It's just a matter, like, because I really don't care about playing the game the right way. And I really don't care about, like, you hit a big home run. Go crazy, to quote Jack Buck. But just don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need that. Like, your goal is to help your team win. And it's not like they don't have 100 cameras in that place videoing everything that's going to happen. If you cleat a guy, there's no real way around that. You cleated him. Like, I just can't figure it out. So, anyway. So, congratulations to the Red Sox on winning the series. Congratulations to everybody who got to go to the parade and throw beer at players.
Right.
I try to avoid the news, so I really didn't see anything about it. I just have had people anecdotally tell me about Mookie Betts, like, or who was it? Porcello caught two Bud Lights in one hand.
I hadn't heard that, but I heard Cora make a comment about their explosiveness in Yankee Stadium. And then Cora was in the skybox last night for the Celtics-Bucks game.
Yep.
When Boston handed Milwaukee its first loss of the season and made a team record 24 three-pointers.
Yeah, I saw that.
One off the NBA record. And I think they shot 44% while doing so. So they were just on fire. And, you know, maybe Cora gave a little bit of the championship magic to the Celtics and kind of just, you know, pass the torch so the Celtics can head in that direction come June.
Yeah, it's always New England fans, Boston sports fans, as much as you want to say that you're not, you're spoiled. Absurdly spoiled. Like, this is not normal. And the kids that are growing up, what was that stat that a 16-year-old kid has seen five Patriots Super Bowl wins, the Celtics winning one, the Bruins winning one, and the Red Sox winning four. Meanwhile, you could have been born in 1919 and died in 2003, and you would have lived your entire happy 84-year-old life without ever seeing the Red Sox win a World Series.
Yeah, it's definitely there. And I kind of felt it when I was thinking late in Game 5, you know, this is going to be a little bit disappointing if the Red Sox win it tonight. Instead of getting to do it back here in Fenway, you know, you got to just...
I wish... Bill Jennings is going to be like, wait a second. He actually just said that. This is one time that I wish this show was on video, so my eye roll could have been transmitted to the world.
Yeah, that's how bad it is.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, let's just make sure we get this championship right. whenever we can get it.
So, I mean, the other thing, because how my brain works is, like, I'll sit there and go, okay, if I'm in the car with the girls, for example, and let's say Third Eye Blind, Semi-Charmed Life comes on, just as a completely random song. Right. That was 20 years ago, okay? So that would be the equivalent of us in high school listening to I Can't Get No Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones, like that same gap,
right.
Okay? So the Dodgers, and I sit there because I remember 1988. It occurs to me that it was a long time ago because I was younger, but it doesn't feel like 1988 is to now what the Dodgers in 1958 being in the World Series or in 1958 moving from Brooklyn to LA, that's the same time gap that I would have had in 1988. To me, 1988, thinking about the Dodgers moving from Brooklyn to LA seems like ancient history. So to people now, thinking about the Dodgers' last championship, that's ancient history. Like, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's more than a generation ago.
Right. But we did get that great moment where Eckersley threw the first pitch to Gibson.
Right.
Eckersley is one of the all-time good sports.
Yeah.
Really is. To just go out there, and own it. Hey, it happened. It is what it is. Like, let's just do it. So, I guess, and speaking of Gibson, you were watching the Celtics last night. I found the natural. So, yeah. Which, I mean, on my ticket stub from the Gibson game, I wrote Roy Hobbs.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. It's somewhere. I probably have it in a box in the basement, but.
It was sort of that same angle towards right center.
Yeah. Yeah, except it didn't knock out the lights. Roy Hobbs had a predilection for destroying things in that movie. The clock in Wrigley Field, the lights, the baseball.
That's right.
Yeah. But, and then, yeah.
He knocked the cover off the ball.
That's one of those movies, like, I stopped and I needed to work and I sat there and just watched it and, like, probably paid more attention to that than what I needed to do. And then whatever this channel is, AXS, that I get on the DirecTV thing, their movie for next Thursday is Bull Durham.
Will you?
I know what I'll be doing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I know what I'll be doing. So, a lot of stuff going on in the world of baseball, and now postseason awards are coming, and it's the Fox Hot Stove Report, almost.
Yeah, right. We're almost there.
Weird. Very weird. So, yeah, but can't believe it. That season just flew by. Next year, maybe I'll keep track of the amount of baseball I watch. That'd be bad.
Yeah, you should.
So, all right. Speaking of, I guess, other random stuff that just comes across our desk, if we had a desk, which we don't. Before we get into this weird Bryson DeChambeau thing, why did the PGA legislate keeping the flag stick in?
You mean, why did they change the rule?
Yeah.
Well, what's happening is on January 1st, 2019, the rules of golf are changing.
Golf.
In that now when you're on the putting green, if you want to keep the flag stick in, you can. And if you make your putt, instead of it being a two-stroke penalty like it has been, there is no penalty. And the main purpose of changing this rule was really for amateur play to speed things up.
Right.
And especially for somebody, if you're playing alone, it makes a lot of sense where, you know, your ball's on the front of the green, pin's in the back, 40 feet away. Instead of having to walk all the way back, take the pin out, go all the way back to your ball, you just, you know, get on the green, putt, and then go up and, you know, finish out. So that's the purpose of the rule. But what's going to be fascinating is how it plays out on the PGA Tour and the strategy decisions that these guys are going to make.
Do you notice... And I'm sure somebody's going to do a calculation on it. I'd be surprised if DeChambeau hasn't already. Is there a benefit to leaving it in?
Well, he thinks that there is, and it's based on physics. And he thinks that for typical tournaments on the PGA, he's going to keep it in because the flagstick is made of fiberglass. And he thinks that what is it he calls the coefficient of restitution?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
he thinks that it's going to be an advantage for the typical flag stick. In the U.S. Open, when they use different material flag sticks, he's not going to keep the pin in. But here's how I look at it in general. How would I do it? You know, just not really thinking about the physics of the flag stick itself, what it's made out of. But just if it's a calm day, maybe a downhill putt, you leave it in. But if it's windy, that's the time that I would take it out, because if it's really windy out, you'll see the flag stick bend a little bit.
It narrows.
And if it narrows to the side, if the ball hits the flag stick, it's not going to go in. So if it's really windy, I would take it out. Otherwise, you know, I might leave it in. But the other thing is, you know, for amateurs, you have to, when you come up on a green, you'll often see that the flag stick is not put in properly. It's diagonal. It's not perfectly placed in and vertical. So you have to make sure that it's in properly. But yeah, it's going to be fun to see which players leave it in and when. It sounds like he's always going to leave it in. Then you'll also have the interesting dynamic of, if you're in a group and one guy wants it out, one guy wants it in, they're going to have to alternate. Their caddies are going to be putting it in, taking it out, putting it in. So it might actually add time to the professionals round, but it's probably going to save time for the amateurs.
All right. So with any of this, DeChambeau is your PGA Tour equivalent of a left-handed pitcher. He's a little unique.
He approaches things a little bit differently.
All of his, like, in his foibles, all of his irons are the same length.
37 and a half inches.
Which, to me, is weird. But to him, there's a reason for it. And the idea is that this is a completely repeatable swing every time. Same back angle, same flex of the arm, same everything all the time.
The only thing that's different is the angle of the iron.
The angle of the iron. So you're letting the club do its work, basically.
Right, and I think it's brilliant. You have much less to practice. You get used to that one length club, which apparently is the length of the average six iron. So he masters the six iron swing, and that's the only club he has to put in his hands. And any golfer who plays consistently knows that things change a lot in terms of physics when you have a wedge in your hand versus when you have a three iron in your hand.
Right.
So he has eliminated all of that.
All he's got to do is take the same swing.
Take the same swing every time. And he's really on his way to mastering that. I mean, he won two tournaments in the FedEx Cup playoffs this past summer. And he's one of the up-and-coming golfers on the tour. You know, a strong player. He's got a great mind. So I really like watching what he has done. And you know, you talk about the generational gap as a Dodgers fan, but just in general, let's think about the next generation of golfers 25 years from now. I mean, what are the chances that maybe 25% of golfers do the same thing?
Yeah.
Where they have one length club. Apparently, you know, he's fitted by Cobra, and they have the set available. I mean, I could very well see that there'd be a big trend in that direction. The more and more success that he has.
I could see that. It's speaking of his clubs, he's also got physics formulas on the head of his clubs that mean something to him. To the rest of us, it just is a bunch of weird Greek characters. He's just a unique dude. I mean, when he was in high school, you sent the article over. When he was in high school, rather than have his parents spend $200 and buy him a new physics book, he copied 180 pages of a physics book, like,
into his own notebooks.
Into his own notebooks. And you look at that and you go, dude, like, what? What are you doing? But, you know, that was, for him, just seemed like a logical conclusion. He was doing algebra when he was six. And he just is a very unique guy who tends to kind of think a little bit differently than everybody else.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, you mentioned left-handers. He has mastered the art of signing his autograph left-handed backwards.
Yeah, I thought that was
interesting. Even though he's righty. Yeah, he sounds like a lefty to me. But one of his quotes is really interesting. He says, "I'm not really smart, but I'm dedicated. I can be good at anything if I love it and dedicate myself. And I love history. I love science. I love music. I love golf. I love learning. I love life. I love trying to be the best at anything and everything. And, you know, it's just it's a great mindset. And it's fun to see all the unique ways that he does it and how he's always butting up against the PGA with his creative techniques. He had tried this putting technique called side saddle,
yeah,
where he's almost like he's bowling because he's standing and he's looking at the hole, at the target, and he's kind of doing that motion like if you were bowling. That's the way he's putting.
Right.
And they eventually banned that because of the actual putter he was using was center shafted. So they banned that. Then he was using a protractor to draw pictures in his yardage book to try and get the exact pin locations. And they banned the use of a protractor during the round.
What?
Yeah. Basically, he's this creative guy. He's got his own techniques, his own methods. And the PGA, you know, is scared that he's doing something unique, and they just ban it in any way that they can. But he keeps coming back, and you know, he won his two playoff events this year. Next year, he's going to be putting with the pin in, and it's going to be fun to watch.
And you wonder how much of that is him kind of saying, I wonder if this works and this is the best thing, and how much of him is just him going, you know what? I do want to just see at what point somebody's just going to sit me down and say, please stop.
Well, I think that's probably part of it, but he really comes across as the guy who kind of goes into his lab, so to speak, and tries things out. And then if he decides that it makes him better, he's going to do it, and he's going to feel great about it and write about it. And the only thing that's going to stop him is a rule change.
Right. Yeah, it's unique, dude. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out next year, too. I never liked putting with the flag stick in.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I feel like it bounces out
it
more
bounces
times
out
than,
more than
you
drops.
Would think.
Yeah.
More than you would think. You know, you hit almost the center of the flag stick and it comes out and you're like, how did that not go down?
Right. Yeah, and that would be my challenge with leaving it in, but hey, he's smarter than I am. He golfs way more than I do.
Right.
Like, he must know something that I don't. So, okay, maybe I'll try it.
Right.
And, you know, I have a feeling that other people are going to do the same thing anyway. So, I don't know. We'll see. In the world, we talked about basketball a little bit, but the big story, really, that came out of the NBA this week was a feel-good story, which was weird. Although, I love the NBA. It's so much fun to watch. The Derrick Rose comeback tour, dropping 50 on the
50.
Jazz.
Yeah, which is a good defensive team.
Right, making Rudy Gobert look a little foolish on a couple drives, too.
Yeah, he finished with both hands with Rudy Gobert in his face. I mean, it was high scoring. It was 128 to 125, and he played 41 minutes. He was in there at the end because it was a close game. He actually scored 6 of his 50 points in the last minute. But he also had 6 assists. He shot over 50%. Every other starter was in double figures. So it's not like he just was shooting out of control. He also threw in a block with 1 second left on a attempt from the corner, a 3-pointer to tie the game. So he was, you know, in every way the star of the game. And he has really had quite a trajectory with his career. You know, he was the MVP. He was, you know, he got a huge contract.
Well, I even go further back than that. Like, Kansas's last championship, which is near and dear to both of our hearts, doesn't happen unless he just goes ice cold from the free throw line late. Like, there's no Mario Chalmers miracle.
Right. That was not his greatest moment. He was,
no,
he was at the peak of college basketball.
Memphis should have won. I mean,
yeah.
There's no reason that he shouldn't have won.
Terrible at the line in the championship game. You're right. And, you know, he was able to rebound and have a great young career in the NBA until he got the knee injury. But he's really had some struggles the last couple of years, physically, mentally. There was a time when he was considering walking away from the game.
Yeah.
Because he was having so much trouble just getting on the court. and his skills were diminishing because of his physical challenges. But Tibbs gave him a call, gave him a second chance in Minnesota. He finished out the year there, and he's come back. You know, he's come back great. He's having a great start. And you're right, it was a feel-good story that, you know, you noticed the support around the league that was very positive.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, he was getting tweets from all over the place congratulating him on what he had done. He was in tears after the game as his teammates were surrounding him. Like, it was obvious that that was an emotional thing for him. And you know, good for him. He's had really an up-and-down career. The MVP, Rookie of the Year, like, you forget how good that guy was. And at one point, not that long ago, I mean, it was the beginning of this decade, he was going to be the face of the NBA, basically. Like, don't forget, like, that was the point in time at which everybody had kind of soured on LeBron because he was taking his talents to South Beach. And Rose was going to be the guy. And it just, it's interesting to see what happens. It's interesting in... By no means is he old either. What is he, 30, 31?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but you're right. You know, to see him emotional in that interview was compelling video.
Yeah, he is 30. He just turned 30.
Yeah, but he's...
I would have told you he's 43.
Well, in basketball years, he's at least 35. And,
right.
You know, he's got that Tibbs effect of, you know, just pounding and pounding so many minutes for so many years.
Yeah, that's...
It's caught up with him.
Very difficult. Man, you've seen it happen with others, and Jimmy Butler's still a Timberwolf.
Yeah. You know, might not
for
be.
Now.
By the time the show airs, he might not be.
Might not be, but we'll see. That is not what we are talking about this week, though. And then around the world of Bedford, a lot of postseason sports still taking place. You guys did the soccer. Which game did you do, Thursday or Saturday?
It was
you
Thursday.
You did the Thursday game. So that was before our last show aired.
Right.
So, okay. So the girls
so
are...
So we talked about that game in that show.
Did they win last night?
They lost in penalty kicks.
What?
Yes.
How come you didn't tell me? So, okay. Lost in PKs to Concord?
Yeah, it was... They were down 1-0. They tied it up in regulation with a penalty kick.
Okay.
I want to say with maybe 25 minutes to go. And then... Game went to overtime, no scores, goes to penalty kicks, and we lose 5-4 in penalty kicks.
Aye. It's just a rough go.
Yeah.
It was a tough. Very good year for the team, some up and downs, good run in the playoffs, of course, but you hope that once you get into penalty kicks, it really is the luck of the draw. Anything can happen at that point. So congratulations to the Bedford High girls soccer team for getting as far as they did. And then the boys play tonight, right? Is it tonight or tomorrow?
Saturday
it
night. Is, so
okay.
You listen
Saturday,
to this Saturday.
Today.
It'll
yes.
be tonight. It's at 7 o'clock at SNU.
Yeah.
And you can go on.
Is it SNU or is it Exeter? Why was I thinking it was Exeter?
Because the girls played at Exeter.
Oh, okay.
The boys are playing their championship at SNU. You can go online and get tickets.
Really? Are you going?
I probably will.
That would have been a safe bet.
Maybe we can put this up on our Facebook. But
yeah, we can put that up.
Go to gofan.co/app/events/36427.
Yeah.
Get your tickets online so you don't have to wait in line.
Our listener is furiously attempting to write it down.
Yeah, we'll put it up on Facebook.
It'll be up on Fox on Sports on Facebook. But yeah, that will... tell you where you can get your tickets. When I went there the last time, it actually, the link that it thought that it was a link to a Nutrisystem menu, oddly enough. But yeah, you can get your tickets there. Student tickets are $6, adult tickets are $8. D1 final, Bedford against the Manchester Central Little Green. And if you think that the players don't care about the regular season, I'd figure that the Little Green probably have a bit of revenge on their minds. After that tightly fought game that was won in overtime by Bedford. Was that last month or earlier? Yeah, it was last month. Everything's last month. We're in November now.
We're in November now. Yeah, and Bedford will have that on their minds because they have that the joy of that comeback victory in overtime. And, oh, by the way, this will be another chance for you fans to go out and see Ryan Slajewski, who was recently selected as one of the top 40 soccer players to play in the East versus West All-American game in Orlando on December 1st. So
wow.
We won't be attending that.
No, neither one of us will be there. We
have
all
other
have,
activities that day.
Actually, yeah, the station will pay for us to go down.
But
might as well.
But that's just a really exciting honor for Ryan. And good luck to the Bulldogs tonight at 7 o'clock.
Yep, indeed. Big deal for them. And then on the football side, the boys and Maddie, you think that of all people, I would know better to say that.
Jeez.
Yeah, no. Of all people, I should know better. I apologize to everybody. The three that are in my house are going to give me a ridiculously hard time for it. But the football team will take on Goffstown in the first round of the playoffs. That will be Saturday. So today 7 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. That's right. At Bedford High School. They beat Goffstown 44-7 in the regular season. They win that one. They get the winner of Merrimack and Ashwood North. Thank you to Hanson for giving me the brackets.
And they beat both of those teams in the regular season.
Yes.
We're not going to look ahead to that.
No,
obviously.
We're not looking ahead to anything.
No.
And then you win that. In all likelihood, you're getting... It seems like it's always Winnicunnett that's there. But Londonderry is the one seed on that side of the bracket. Are we doing brackets like this is...
No. This is just so you can visually see the playoff picture in Division I football here in New Hampshire.
So there you go. My guess would be it's going to be Winnicunnett and Bedford. The always interesting thing, though, is Bedford hasn't seen anybody in the bottom half of the bracket.
That's correct.
So after running through their opposition 426-78 during the regular season, they'll see Goffstown that they beat handily, Merrimack that they beat by, what was that, 29-ish, maybe? And Nashua North that they beat, I think, by 31.
31-7.
So, I mean, everybody within that top half of the bracket, they've had their way with. You would figure, if all goes according to Hoyle, they will be there again. But then you're facing some tough teams that are, whoever comes out of the bottom half of the bracket is going to be a tough challenge to ultimately win that state title.
We should talk to Coach Stank about this.
We should. So, with that in mind...
Let's call him.
We're not going to call him yet because I don't think he's got a break yet. I think he's at 12:45. But I don't know. And also a big weekend of college football. I'm excited for Alabama LSU. It's Bama is favored by 2 touchdowns in that one. The total set at 54.5. I would take Bama and the under. I hate betting the under, though.
It's not very enjoyable.
No, you sit there and the under is never safe.
No.
Particularly like your worst case scenario would be, all right, it's tied 17-17. You think I'm safe and it goes to 2 or 3 periods of overtime.
Especially in college.
You're just foiled again.
Really have not learned the tackling techniques that the NFL guys seem to have picked up once they get to that level.
So good weekend of college football. I have to entertain myself somehow because USC is horrible. But on the bright side, I guess we'll get a new coach out of this whole thing. So eventually, even though they just signed him to an extension. So, yes, but I'm not going to surround myself with negativity and think of college football. All I know is that last Saturday with USC losing and the Dodgers losing, I was not in a good place.
No.
Yes. And yeah, the news of today coupled with the sports of that day, I'm like, all right, I'm out.
Right.
So we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back with Bedford High football coach Derek Stank. You're listening to Fox on Sports. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hanson. We are joined by Bedford High football coach Derek Stank. Coach, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So, great regular season for you guys. The teams outscored the opposition 426-78. I did the math earlier.
That also adds up to 9-0.
It is 9-0. Yeah. Yes. You have
the most
won-
important stat of them all.
Exactly. Yeah, you haven't won by fewer than 24. Heading into the playoffs, of course, it's a different thing entirely than the regular season. How do you prepare to play a full game against some really tough opponents?
Well, I think just like we do with every game, you want to prepare by preparing to play one snap at a time. From there, it goes to one series, to one quarter, to one half, to eventually it puts together the full game. if you try to focus on too big of a goal and too big of a situation, hey, we got to play, you know, the whole game, you know, it can start to trickle away from you. So if you play a bad play, that's fine. Just play the next one better. If your series is bad, that's fine. Play the next series better. And if you have that mindset, I think it makes it easy to kind of continue to play that full game throughout the course, regardless of what's happening.
Makes a lot of sense. Translates well among other sports, too, because it sounds eerily similar to a lot of things that I talk about if I'm coaching baseball, like who wants the next out. Your team had a long shutout streak in the middle of the season, but in recent weeks has surrendered more points. Is this a concern at all, or just a byproduct of the offense scoring too quickly, getting the defense back out on the field, and also some changes you might have made late in games?
Yeah, I mean, not concerning, honestly. You know, we definitely, I think the biggest thing we've been faced with, BG did a good job of coming at us, and they had some good success through the air against us and on the ground. So they did a very good job. But, you know, as we got into some of the later quarters of these games, obviously, you know, one of our main priorities is we have a lot of two-way players, and we don't have a ton of backups. So, you know, we're trying to get as many guys rotated out as the game gets into an under-control situation. So, I mean, with Keene, it was 35-0 at the half. So going into the second half, it was primarily our JV team. And we let up 20 points against them. But, you know, we got a program, a JV program, to get out there, get a lot of varsity quality reps against a good team, you know, and to get a good battle in that second half. So that's going to help us out tremendously next year. On top of that, if we are unfortunate enough to have an injury, you know, we've got guys that have some varsity reps. So, I mean, at the end of the day, yes, it's great to pitch shutouts. You know, it's great to be able to do that. But the most important thing is to make sure the starters are healthy. We limit their reps as much as possible. And if that comes at us giving up, you know, a couple dozen points in a game, that's fine by me. Because the only thing that really matters is that we are 1-0 at the end of each week, and that adds up to being 12-0 at the end of the season.
Exactly. We are here with Coach Derek Stank of the Bedford High football program. And you mentioned it. It was you hit on it in that last question, talking about getting players experience. Last year, you had Thomas Morgan, who stepped up when Connor Robert went down. Morgan was forced into duty. Has the experience that he picked up been a blessing in disguise for you in this 2018 season?
Well, it's definitely been a blessing. I mean, you know, the disguise part, yeah, I mean, it sucked to lose Connor. He was a great athlete, a great quarterback for us, and to not have him was tough, especially mid-season when, you know, no one was really taking any quarterback rep from a varsity repetition standpoint going into that year last year. So Thomas had some growing pains to go through. We, as an offense and a program, had some growing pains to go through. But those pains that we experienced in the middle of last season, you know, to get to the end of last season, to be able to go out there against Winnicunnett, who was obviously a very good team and won the whole thing, and to take it into overtime and to be right there, I mean, essentially one play away from a W against the 12-0 team. You know, we as a program developed, he as a quarterback developed, and then the amount of work that he put in over the offseason, I mean, night and day difference from where he was last year in the middle of the season to where he is now towards the end of his senior season.
Yeah, that really pays off, Coach. And when we broadcast the Keene game on 105.1, we noticed how once the second half started with that 35-0 lead, it was all the JV guys, you know, getting some great experience. And before that game, I had a chance to talk with Coach Vopel, and he talked about how you guys really have the one-week-at-a-time focus. And I got the sense that maybe you drew some things from Coach Belichick. So I'm curious about your approach as you head into the first round of the playoffs against Goffstown, a team that you beat pretty easily in the regular season. How are you approaching it sort of scouting-wise, and what are some of the things that you do that, you know, you may have drawn from Coach Belichick to have your team have such great success?
Well, just to give credit where credit is due, I'd love to say I got my coaching from Coach Belichick, but my knowledge of him is that he coaches on Sundays for the Patriots, and my experience from good football coaching comes from Coach Sean McDonald at University of New Hampshire. As a player there and as a captain for that team back in 2005, you know, what I'm saying is pretty much what he would say. You know, it's a 1-0 philosophy. If you asked him about the state championship game, you know, or, you know, the national championship game, you know, he's going to look at you the way you're never going to ask about that again. So, you know, Sean McDonald did a great job of keeping his guys grounded He's always set a good tone there. It's a blue collar program, and that's definitely where I've taken my mindset as far as, hey, we need to go out and get the W this week. That's the only thing that matters. So to be able to you know, transfer on some of those lessons he has taught me to the next generation is pretty cool. As far as going into Goffstown, you know, they're a great football team. You know, we played them early in the season and they had some struggles, but you know, everyone was trying to find their way. You know, we lost 5 practices, essentially 5 days worth of practice throughout the course of our preseason based on the changing of when the start of football was, typically the Wednesday before everything else, and now it was that next Monday. So, you know, I think our programs, you know, across the state, we were a little behind in some of the instructional periods, some of the knowledge and things like that. So they have come on, obviously, 6-0 in the last 6 games, and, you know, they've developed. And, you know, Huff does a great job with that program over there. He's a cerebral-style coach. He's got a lot of knowledge of the game. He's a line coach, which obviously I respect as a line coach myself. And, you know, he does a great job of not just playing, you know, with good athletes, but getting the athletes in the best position to be successful. So, you know, we've got to realize that, hey, it's a different team. It is not the same team we saw, and we cannot expect to get ourselves in a situation where we're going to get turnovers and short fields and stuff like that, because a lot of our success, you know, we've had defense has come up and given us short fields on an offensive standpoint, and we've capitalized on those. But, you know, we need to be able to go 80 yards against a good defense. We need to be able to, you know, shut down an offense that's proven that they can drive down the field on us. So, you know, we're not going to take it lightly, that's for sure, and we'll be ready to go Saturday.
We are joined by Coach Derek Stank of the Bedford High football program. Coach, this year, what has pleasantly surprised you about this team, either as individuals or what you've seen from the whole team?
So I'd say first and foremost, the leadership of my 5 captains, you know, Ryan Toscano, Harrison Magulon, Andrew Twite, Jacoby Collins, and Timmy Galamaga. You know, all 5 of these individuals, they have done an excellent job of kind of honing this team and developing a sense of brotherhood that has ultimately allowed us to find success. You know, we're doing senior speeches right now, and I'm listening to them speak, and it's not surprising that I think we're having some of success as a unit based on the way they're talking. They are great individuals, great student athletes, and ultimately, they've been amazing captains for this program. You know, we put on the back of our shirts at the end of last season for our team slogan for this year, United we stand and divided we fall. And that was the mindset of going into this year. You know, we were going to do this together. And if you look at a lot of our stats, you know, a lot of our individuals and what they've done, you know, we're spread. You know, I mean, we don't have the, you know, the great Gatorade player of the year, one guy that's making all the plays. We have a lot of guys that are doing a lot of different facets on the field, offensively, defensively, and special teams. And I think it's a lot of selfless football. And that sort of mindset that starts with the captains, that trickles down through the 14 seniors, and ultimately just filters to the rest of the program, is allowing us to have the success we're having this year.
Now, speaking of those 14 seniors, you're losing some big names who have done a lot for you on the field and off the field as well. What are you going to miss the most from that group that's moving on?
You know, I mean, I think the same question could be asked as of last year, even the year before, you know, when we won states. And, you know, it always seems like, hey, we're losing all these guys. But the biggest thing I think as any good program has proven to be able to do is to have the returners year after year. So to not just be focusing on the guys that are starting right now, to understand, to constantly be coaching up the kids that are sophomores and juniors, to be able to be ready to go, because their time's going to come, and the off season work. I mean, we are 3 days a week. It's 90% of the team. They're in that weight room. If they're not playing another sport, they're listening 3 days a week. We're over the summer 4 days a week. So just having that mindset that, you know, the next guy needs to be ready to go. And I say to the players all the time, you know, injuries happen. People leave. You know, obviously guys are going to graduate. The game goes on. The game goes on with or without you. Far past me, far past any of these players on this team, Bedford High School is going to be playing football. And it needs to continue to move on. So to lose some of these guys that we have this year, it's going to be tough. Just like it's been in years past. You know, we had a great linebacker core last year. You know, we had out there, we had Thomas Norfleet, we had Dimitri Agonos, you know, we had Spencer Adams. You know, we had guys that were good football players. and big and strong. And we came back this year, and we got Harrison Legoulon. You know, we got Alex Pantelakis, you know, moving Zachary Guerin up into the box, and Ryan Toscanos. I mean, we've kind of hopefully taken that approach that we're going to keep replacing these guys as they move on. So it'll be tough. You know, some guys will be harder to replace than others. You know, we Ryan Toscanos, a very versatile player. Harry Legoulon, you know, once again, same thing, very versatile player. I think, you know, honestly, our defensive ends right now are kind of the standout of our program, and you typically wouldn't know that just because of the nature of their position. But our defensive ends lead the team in tackles. They're 1 and 2 on the team. They have a combined, you know, 40 TFLs, over 20 sacks on the year.
Wow.
They just are great football players. They're very instinctual. They're 185 pounds soaking wet, so they're not going to blow you away if you saw them walking down the hall. But the way they play, the knowledge they have of the game, and just what they bring to it, you know, those are going to be some tough ones to replace. If I had to, like, name an area, it would be my defensive end, being that it's not one of them leaving. It's both two-year starters, both going away at the same time. And when you're playing all these zone offenses, you need defensive ends that are smart. They know how to read what's getting read on them. So when that quarterback is reading them, they need to know what that quarterback's thinking and react appropriately. Because if you just attack the quarterback, you're giving in to exactly what they want, the zone read.
Well, leave it to a line guy to give credit to his line guys and get them to carry the torch forward. Well, Coach Stank, we appreciate the time as always. Best of luck. This is going to air on Saturday, so best of luck today. And hopefully we can catch up soon.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you guys having me, and we'll talk later.
Hey, thank you for the time.
Good luck, Coach.
All right, thanks a lot. Have a good one.
You as well. That was Coach Derek Stank of the Bedford High football program, and it's always fun, and we've talked about this on a number of occasions. When you get coaches on who you can sense from hearing them talk, they genuinely care about their players, not just the players' development on the field, but the players' development as a human being. And having seen how Coach Mack over at UNH deals with his players, you know, it's that the apple didn't fall far from the tree to throw out. Everybody always wants to talk about coaching trees. But, you know, this one, it's definitely consistent. It's the same sort of attitude. And the second he said, oh, yeah, it's not the guy that coaching on Sunday, I'm like, oh, yeah, we know exactly who he's talking about.
Right. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But congrats on a great regular season. Of course, Coach Stank would tell you that nothing's done until they've gone 12-0 and won the next three. So wish them best of luck
in the
rest of that journey.
That's so, right.
Before we close up, we have about 3 minutes. Last night, the Thursday night game, first of all, the Raiders are absolutely horrible. I don't think anybody ever saw that one coming. Just bad.
They are, and they've quickly changed course with some trades, and they're stockpiling first-round draft picks, and they're going to go hard at the, you know, kind of quickly turn that roster around under Coach Gruden. But they really looked terrible last night, and they made a rookie quarterback taking his first NFL snap, Nick Mullins, looked pretty good. He had basically the first opening performance a quarterback has had since 1970 with 260 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. And it was really fun to hear Joe Buck's description of some of his traits and some of the things he does and some of the things he did to get ready. You know, you talk about Coach Stank and, you know, passing it on to the next player. Well, Nick Mullins has really been waiting for his opportunity, and what he has done as the backup quarterback for the Niners, third string quarterback,
yeah,
is after each game he would take the play calls and then he would go back on the field and run through the whole game himself as if he was making the call, getting the call from the coach, making the call, running the play.
Yeah.
And he tapes crowd noise, puts on headphones, and he has the crowd noise in his ears as he's practicing calling the plays and making the plays.
Yep.
And this is what he did to get himself ready, and he got his first opportunity and he was right on the money.
Sean McVay approves.
Yes, he does. Definitely.
It's impressive to hear that. It's impressive. You were talking about the stats first since 1970. There's a team that goes in and researches that. When we were talking about Derrick Rose earlier, the stat that came up, I don't know if you saw this in ESPN, He dribbled 637 times in the game and had 67 picks set for him. And now I've realized that I could play in today's NBA.
You could
keep that as a stat.
I mean, you could make several million a year.
Just setting picks. That's it.
Especially, you know what they track now is points per pick.
But yeah.
You know, who is an effective setter of
picks? We're going to make somebody come and do this.
We should track it.
Yeah, we're going to give Kenny like an iPad and let him just track it. Who counts dribbles?
The cameras.
Okay. Cameras. I was like, is there like an intern sitting somewhere with like a pitch counter? Click, click, click.
They don't have to. It's these cameras that have been installed in the NBA arenas. They track the dribbles, how fast you're running, how far you're running.
Number of beers the guy in the sixth row has consumed.
You have to pay extra for that stat.
Yeah. Number of punches thrown at Rajon Rondo. Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right. Another great week of Fox on Sports, at least as far as we're concerned. You may think otherwise, but hey, we'll be back next week regardless. Thanks to our guest, Derek Stank, the coach of the Bedford High football team. And thanks to everybody here at Bedford 105.1, Harry, Bill, Colleen, and Chris for all of their hard work in getting the show on the air. We will catch you next week. Good luck to the boys soccer team as well as the football team as the playoffs continue to roll on. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.